The Uncanny Valley. The Longhouse, isolated at the edge of the Idaho wilderness. The Longhouse was built as an artist's retreat, a large, rustic, but comfortable lodge with an open kitchen at one end and a gigantic stone fireplace at the other. A massive, rough-hewn, wooden dining table at center is the primary gathering place, eating, drinking, discussing, imagining, arguing, inspiring, discovering. They all happen here, or used to. Stairs to a second-level walkway with separate doors to two bedrooms, each with private bathrooms. Up center, the large double front doors framed by rows of tall, narrow windows looking out into the forest. Another door or two on the ground level, a closet, a pantry, a piano. There is a hand-painted sign on the wall that reads, "Chop your own wood, and it will warm you twice," Henry Ford. Downstage toward the audience, imagine floor-to-ceiling windows, a view of the Sawtooth Mountains. It is a place meant to be inspiring. Act one, scene one, late spring, late afternoon. Stanley is in the kitchen preparing dinner. He speaks to someone off stage, but it seems as if he is speaking to the audience.
In the 30s and 40s, there were artists from all over. It started with a few writers, including Ollie's grandfather, Oliver Sr., and his wife, Lee. She was a painter. The Longhouse was her notion. Built as a place to get away from the business without going home. She spoke of the third place, not work, not home, someplace other, a place to find inspiration. Time works differently up here, under the high peaks. Thompson, Hayburn, Williams, Kramer, mountains named for men, and others named for stories. War Bonnet, The Coffin, Red Centennial, The Elephant's Perch, mountains on mountains on stories. War Bonnet, The Coffin, Red Centennial. I just read that. Mountains on mountains on mountains, still young and sharp and defiant, climbing up out of the tree line and stubbornly clinging to snow. The Sawtooth Mountains, the bones of the earth. Here, she said, we'll build it here. And they did. Carved it right from the side of the mountain. They left every tree they could, but those they had to cut down got milled on site and put right back into the place. The beams, floorboards, the furniture, the table. It grew right here on this spot.
Yeah, I can use that, right? The table?
Of course. Everything here, the entire property, including myself. Whatever you may need.
Great, thanks.
You'll find extra quilts in your closet should you need them.
Will I?
Some do. You should take a look either way. They're quite beautiful, handmade by Ardith Durney Thorne, Ollie's great aunt. There's a quilt for each member of the Durney family going back for generations. She worked in spectacular detail, hundreds of pieces of hand-dyed cotton in fractal patterns, tens of thousands of stitches. Complexity and craft saturated with history.
Are we still talking about blankets?
Oh, quilts, actually.
If I'm cold, they're blankets. Got it.
Are you? I can build a fire.
No, don't. Look, I'm fine. Thank you.
I like to make our guests feel at home.
Well, I don't need a home. I need a place to work. Through the table?
I thought...
Yeah, I'm not really hungry.
Of course, we'll do.
Stanley begins to clear the single place setting.
It's been a while, but some great artists have worked in this space. Painters, sculptors, composers. Alba De Santos wrote her first novel at this very table in December, many years ago.
I know who that is.
She was a giant in a tiny frame. Oliver Sr. met her at a reading in San Sebastian and was smitten. In fact...
Stanley goes to the bookshelf.
That first novel inspired much of his later work in the industry. Here it is. The Clockmakers. There's a passage.
Okay, shut up. Look, I don't need your pre-recorded story. I don't have time to read your book. I need quiet and I need space.
My mistake. Can I...
No. Okay. Here's what I need. I need you silent unless I ask a question. I need the times for sunrise and sunset each day. I need access to power and I need a ladder. You can be here when I work, but don't stare. And if I get hurt, I'll need your help. Can you do that?
Will do.
Scene two, late that night. moonlight through the upstage windows. Sydney's flash rigs are barely visible in the shadows. Her cameras themselves, of which there are several, are small, wireless, and compact. There is a subtle, repetitive beep accelerating in the darkness. Edgar, a bit drunk, dressed for the cool mountain air, carrying a backpack and a large frame wrapped in canvas and rope, enters through the front door and turns on the lights. Sydney stands on the table center, facing directly upstage toward Edgar. She is completely naked. Edgar turns off the lights.
Who are you?
No, who are you?
Hey, welcome, Eddie.
Eddie?
Yes, who are you? Who is she? Stanley, who is she?
The beeping quickens in the darkness.
Eddie, this is Sydney.
Your brother sent me.
Sent you?
He said I could work here.
No, you... Naked?
I'm working!
Sydney, this is Edgar.
Look, you can't be here. This is my place.
Your brother's place?
Who are you?
The camera flash... A camera flash or a quick series of flashes as the beeping stops abruptly.
Eddie, this is Sydney.
And you're Edgar Durney.
Welcome back, Eddie.
Stanley pulls the door shut.